You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Welcome to Tumble Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings wrestling podcast on the Social Suplex Network. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
Oh my gosh, it feels so good to be back all together.
All together. All
in our natural habitats.
At home.
In our little terrariums.
Nothing looming. No celebrities looming.
No celebrities. No holidays. No long drives.
Except it's your birthday, Allie. Happy birthday.
It is today. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, guys.
You're celebrating with us. We should have made up a fun game or all gotten Chris Jericho's, you know, bubbly.
Because I've been so horny for Chris Jericho recently, I thought you were going to be like, get a cameo where he like blows your kiss or something. Like,
I mean, yeah, we should have. Maybe. Leah, there's still time. We can chip in.
Guys, all right, pause the podcast.
Where he just says, or where he just kind of does like a Ren Faire, like, hello, charming milady. Like, and it's like, that's not cool. It's really not good for men to do that. But for some reason, in this moment, when I thought about Chris Jericho doing it as the King of New York, I was like, well, maybe. It's not a no. Did everybody have a nice week off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I collected a baby.
I collected two babies.
I collected two as well.
Perfect.
So.
Five in total, girl.
That's a lot
of
little boys.
More
yeah.
than sufficient for our spell.
I stayed with my brother who has the kids. And honestly, because my other brother and sister-in-law live in the same city, they had really climbed up the aunt and uncle rankings. And I was a little concerned. But I clawed my way back in there, staying in their home.
Good for you, Anne.
Yeah.
You're not out of the game until you're out of the game, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
I also had a very successful week. The last time I saw one of these children, he was at a very shy, delicate age where he hated that I was like, he was, the only thing he wanted was for his mothers to hold him up to look at fans. And my being there was like so disconcerting and upsetting to him. Like, she's not a fan. Get her out of here.
She's distracted. She might judge how I want to look at the fan all the time. I
she
can't be
wants
myself.
To look at the fans too, but it's kind of my job. But this time I got a yarn winder for Christmas and he was enchanted by my yarn winder. And it actually was quite funny because so he loves doing little crafts and stuff and he had all this yarn. And so we would put it on the yarn winder, make a cake of yarn. At first, he was quite bad at making the cakes. He's a small child. And so they would get really knotted. But then it was like the next day he'll want to wind again. So I was like Rumpelstiltskin in the night, like unknotting and rewinding all of the yarn. I was just sitting there watching Law & Order SVU at their dining room table and my friend came through and was just like, what's going on here? And I was like, just getting a really good head start on tomorrow's work. Just really making some headway on these balls of yarn.
When you're desperate for a child to like you, there's nothing you won't do.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, yeah. You'll sell out anything.
Mm-hmm. And it feels so good when they're happy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good work to all of us aunties. Let's talk. It was a good week, I think, to miss wrestling because I don't think anyone was very happy. I didn't get the impression that anyone was feeling and much joy.
No, the vibes were pretty rancid, so I was really glad we just simply didn't have to engage in that.
But we didn't know anything about that because we were winding our yarn and moving up the rankings and seeing babies. So we're back this week, though. So we'll lightly reference stuff that happened while we were out, but I don't think we'll get into any of it too much. Last week on Dynamite, Kenny Omega fought Brian Cage. The Machine versus the Best Bout Machine. When I read that, I was just like, wow, wrestling's so stupid. Wrestling, you're dumb. Kenny won, and then afterwards he got beaten up by the Callis family, and Will Ospreay ran out for the save, and then Fletcher and Takeshita and Ospreay and Omega all threw down with each other and thumbed each other in the eyes and stuff. And then this week's Dynamite opened with an in-ring face-off between Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega. So Ospreay congratulated Kenny on still being alive. And then he was just explaining in just such a sweet, dumb boy way, like, I know, maybe I've been a dick before, but I've changed. I'm, like, fine now. It's, like, crazy that you came back right now because Jon Moxley is, like, pretty out of control. I don't really know what to do about that. And I'm just desperate to make a friend. And just kind of seems like we can be friends now.
His vibe was so funny because he was so stupid. And it was just like, Kenny, you've been gone, and things got real bad around here. Like, you wouldn't believe it. And I think you and I really could maybe make it up.
It's been so scary, and I don't have any friends.
And I keep trying to get at Moxley, but then the Don Callis family keeps getting in my way.
My mom said that if you want to make a friend, just ask. But I asked lots of people, Kenny, and nobody says yes.
Brody keeps barking at me.
Well, and they even have a room in their faction, but I don't know what the barking means.
They didn't want me in there. I could bark real good if they wanted me to, but they didn't even want to hear it. They just barked at me and left. The idea of Will Ospreay desperate to do a barking audition in the House of Black, and they just, like, bark over him, and he keeps being like, please be quiet. I can do it. You'll be able to hear it. Oh, my God. Anyway, Kenny didn't buy it. He was like, you were such a dick and you suck and I don't think I'll ever be forgiving you. Anyway, in the middle of that, Don Callis came out.
It was pretty delightful, too, because Kenny was like, I remember exactly what happened the last time we saw each other. You tried to put a screwdriver in my head, and it was the same screwdriver as Don Callis, and I'm still pretty mad about it. I was like, wow, is this the first time anyone's ever remembered the last time they interacted on wrestling?
Honestly, maybe. I couldn't count the number of times just last night. I was like, do they remember their previous history? Because even I do, and I think it would be relevant in this moment.
I thought it was so incredibly well done because I saw someone be like, it was really rushed. And I was like, I guess, like, I mean, I know it all happened in the span of like 10 minutes, but they covered every single beat that you'd want them to cover. Right. Mm-hmm. And to be the most important part, they talked to each other through this thing. Like Kenny was like talking to Ospreay about things that had happened and he referenced it not in a like very like theatrical, like, and many moons ago, like he was like, no,
concrete.
Yeah, very concrete. He was like, this happened. I remember it. I was, and here's how I felt about it. I was there. I remember it
all too well. I agree. I mean, the bar is on the floor, basically.
Oh, yeah.
It's just funny when we're saying this and it's like, yeah, you should all be able to do this. Like, pause. This shouldn't be as hard as it apparently is for some of you. It's like they just accessed in their mind banks things that happened in the past, which I know is difficult. We complain about it a lot, but you can always go to cagesideseats.com and read a recap. They accessed those memories and then they just concretely said what those memories were and how it might impact them in the present. And I thought that was really good to do.
It was really well done. It was like, this is what I needed. Like sometimes when people sometimes when we say things like, you know, like they could have pulled on their history, I think people often like imagine that it would take like segments and, you know, video packages and all this stuff. And it's like, no, literally just what Kenny and Will Ospreay did. Made me happy.
And it's sometimes you, the wrestlers, have to say it. It can't just be commentary. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Commentary? Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, I love to listen to our fun commentators, but I would be lying if I said that they don't sometimes become background noise. Sometimes the wrestlers themselves must say the things if you want us to hear and understand them. And you should want us to hear and understand
them. Right, and if you want me to fully believe it, you have to say it. Like, the commentary can kind of hint at it and lead you there, but you have to say it.
That's true.
Yeah, and you learn so much about, like, people's characters and where they are in that moment when they interact with one another. Like, it really clarifies things more when they do have, like, an actual conversation where they're, like, reacting. They're not just monologuing at each other.
A dialogue. Right.
Yes.
To speak.
To speak to each other, not monologue about each other.
Like, yeah. Like, it gave me so much more of a sense of, like, where Kenny is emotionally than, like, a monologue does.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, oh, Kenny is, like, attacking Don Callis the second he sees him. Kenny is holding grudges. Oh, like, Kenny's furious,
yeah,
you know?
He's in
that's
a very
great.
Bitter, vengeful place, even though he pretended he... You know,
I know. Kenny
wasn't.
Said, right. I'm over all of that. But then Don Callis came out and said, look at these two prima donnas. And Kenny bolted for him like a racehorse that just got shot with a dart. Like, it's like he had a shot on his rump and he bolted.
I really do actually appreciate it because it is funny because, like, when his guts were falling out, he was, like, actually, like, fighting, like, Ricky and Big Bill. And, like, he had, like... the thing with the Elite, and he, like, somehow I actually really love this. He was like, the source of my problems is still Don Callis. It wasn't that. It wasn't the Elite.
Yeah.
I know the Young Bucks' heart. It's
I
fine.
Know their hearts. The theme of the week in wrestling.
The true root of all of my problems is Don Callis, and I know I can get my life and my guts back on track if I can simply murder him.
If I kill Don Callis, nothing can ever go wrong with my guts again.
It's honestly so nice because he was, like, he had that dissociating vibe so much when his guts were going bad, but he was often, like, sitting next to Don Callis who was talking about, like, the weird things he'd done to Kenny in the past and the powders and what have you. So it's like... Yeah, like, for Kenny to go from that, where it's like, I'm kind of under his spell, to, like, oh, actually, I hate him. It's, like, an interesting shift, but it makes sense for the character.
Yeah, I think it's great. So he was fighting. So he bolted for Don Callis. I think it was kind of a trap because then the Callis fit. I mean, not really a trap because it's like, you can kind of see it coming. Like,
it was a box, like, propped up with a big chocolate cake underneath
and
it.
He said, what am I going to do? Not lunge for the cake. And it's like, so true, King. When you want it, you know, you'll pay any price. And so the rest of the Callis family came out to wail on him. Ospreay was standing in the ring, kind of clearly deciding what to do because Kenny really rebuffed his offer of friendship. I love that he took a minute to be like, oh, I don't know, and then was like, well, you know, you're just going to have a good time. And then so he jumped on in there, and they started brawling. They went out into the crowd. They went out into the arena. I didn't expect the segment to go on for as long as it did, and I was so delighted by it.
Yeah.
And it really, it feels so stupid, especially for me, an idiot, to be like, this felt like really old school AEW, but it actually did.
I saw multiple people, including that Bleacher Report recap, say the same thing. So it's actually a really insightful observation. You did say it at the time. Yeah.
And I was just interested in it because I was like, they did this and it really did have, like, it did have the feel of, like, early AEW stuff. And I felt the same way about the cliffhanger a couple weeks ago. And so I was watching this and being like, wow, are these Kenny's, am I understanding Kenny's creative instincts? Am I accessing some of Kenny's creative instincts? And I felt proud of myself. Maybe, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it seems that way. Yeah. It was so much fun. It was a really fun brawl and, like, really interesting in the arena. Like, they were doing crazy stuff, obviously, because they're very good wrestlers.
They're
but it was so wild. Fun to watch. Yeah. Those moonsaults off the things. Yeah.
Yeah. Will Ospreay did a crazy Ibushi-like moonsault, and I was losing it because I was like, I don't think that you should be allowed to do that, but you also just walked it off like it was nothing. So
I was genuinely scared. I mean, I get this way with wrestling sometimes where I'm just like, and it's live. I'm nervous.
Yeah. It's like, we could be watching someone really hurt themselves right now.
I don't
want
to see anything bad happen. So he and Kenny and Ospreay had some, like, moments in the match where they were, oh God, I just remembered that we didn't talk about the most important thing about the in-ring segment. Guys, we have to rewind and talk about their outfits. What is is wrong with us? This is so sick. We jumped to talking about the fighting and we didn't even talk about the fact that Kenny came out with his hair in a ponytail and his like Omega baseball tee and jeans on, and he looked like a Christy Thomas tomboy girl.
Yeah.
80s style tomboy. Absolutely.
So frigging cute. And then
so cute.
And then what was happening with Will Ospreay's hair this week?
He slicked it down.
It was like straight, kind of. Yeah, but like it had like a little wave. And I think he'd gotten a haircut because I think it's a different length than it was when it was like when he actually straightened it. But it was, I was such an interesting cut. What was going on with it?
I don't know. It was such as like a sweetie cutie, like cutie
boy. Would
you call
it a bowl cut?
Kind of.
Yeah, it was in that realm.
But in that way where it's like, it would be like a seventh grade 80s love interest. You know what I mean?
He's like, he's really pulling on some biological strings with me. Like, yeah, of course I'm going to a homecoming dance with him.
The combination of their looks as they were like looking at each other sent me down the most insane rabbit hole last night during the show and then for like an hour afterwards where I was like, I had a book growing up that this reminds me of so much, and I don't know what it was. It was about these, like, boys and girls feuding or something. I finally found it. It was not easy. It was by Lewis Satcher, and it was called Sixth Grade Secrets. And it's about this girl who starts a club called Pig City, which I'm obsessed with.
Wow, I love
and in
that.
Order to join Pig City, you had to submit as evidence some kind of embarrassing secret that the club would then hold, you know, as like blackmail, basically, so you can never betray the club.
So it was kind of Nexium for sixth graders?
Kind of a little bit. But then, like, this guy tried to join and he was going to take a photo of himself in a dress and kiss the main girl, Laura, who's Kenny in this scenario, as his blackmail. But then something goes wrong. So then he starts another club called, like, Monkey Town. So it's Monkey Town and Pig City. And they get in this big fight. And Laura has this beautiful butt length hair that she's so proud of, but then eventually this mean girl cuts it all off and it's like pretty bad behavior, but then she ends up like the guy who founded Monkey Town, they make up and he likes her and I think they kiss. And I would love for Kenny Osprey to do that storyline for me, and she's wearing like a baseball cap on that. It's just like, if you, I'll send you the cover and you'll see, like, yeah, that's them. Yeah,
I already googled it, and yeah, I see it for sure. Yeah.
So yeah.
It's that's incredible. I want to read this book immediately, and I'm obsessed with Kenny starting a club called Pig City.
The club name Pig City. I read that and I was like, that's fucking badass. Did I appreciate that growing up enough, like how fucking cool that is? Pig City. Anyway, okay, what else? So what were we talking about? The wrestling. Yeah, they did. Yeah, so then they jumped off stuff. Oh, production? Kenny did a crazy moonsault too. Production missed it.
You kind of saw the first half of it, I think. Yeah, but not ideal. Classic old school AEW at the same time. AEW, so, you know.
You can't argue with that. If I were Kenny, I would be rip shit about that, though. I would be like, what the fuck, guys?
He probably
I really
is.
Would be like, I would not be over. I'd be like, you missed it? My moonsault?
He's noting it down in his little notebook. It's like the exploding death wire match.
Kenny was the one who was rip shit. Yeah, after the exploding death wire. Yeah. Okay. So then they had all this fighting, and then Kenny and Will climbed a lighting rig. Is that what that was?
Mm-hmm.
And they were just up the lighting rig shouting out some little bon mots to Don Callis as he retreated. And Kenny basically was like, let's have a... Will, I'm so sorry. Like, I will be your friend, brother. I'm hopping in the foxhole with you. You can put baby in the corner, but only you, nobody else, like that kind of stuff. And he said, you and I will fight Fletcher and Takeshita at Grand Slam Australia. And then they came down. They came down from the lighting ring and popped their tops off.
Just immediately stripped them off.
Yeah, okay. Buddies.
before they came down, Kenny, first Kenny's music started playing and he was like, wait, I'm not done. And then he actually did promo the Australia thing. And then he was like, now I'm done because I got to climb down because I'm afraid of heights.
And he did like a little giggle too.
It was quite cute. And he did his goodbye and goodnight thing up there. Yeah, which is always so funny. Every time he does it again, I'm like, oh, Kenny, we're still doing okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's do it.
We'll still do it. Yeah.
Like,
we'll
just somehow can't internalize that, like, how much he loves doing it.
I know. Well, and every time he does it, and it's been going on for so long, I always think he's about to say, and good night, nurse. And I'm just like, I don't know why that's stuck in my head like that, but it's always like, Kenny, what are you doing? Oh, right. It's not, that's not what it is.
Oh my God. I love him so much. It was a perfect start to Dynamite.
I'm so happy with the way he's coming back right now. And I think I initially was like a little bit like, oh, he's back with the Don Callis family. But honestly, now I think it's great because there's like a lot of fun matchups they can do with all these guys.
Yeah. And it's like Kenny's doing like pretty good character consistency. I think the points you made earlier about his like dissociation the last time we saw him with Callis and like how he's responding now, it's like it's working really well. And like, I think it's probably a good, I think that it, I liked what it brought out in Ospreay. I liked Ospreay's character in relation to Kenny's. And I was like, okay, let's keep doing that. Because, Will, I'm going to need to see it. I want you to watch what Big Brother Kenny does.
Get him a little mentor. Get him a...
Yes, Big Brother, Big Little Brother.
But... Big Brother, Little Brother.
Well, I was going to say, what almost came out of my mouth was Big Brother, Big Sister. And I was like, well, that's different. But... like, I just thought that, like, once again, like, they earned it. You know what I mean? Like, the thing is that, like, because they did that brawl and because it was longer than it usually is, and it was so insane and joyous, and you could see Kenny, like, especially so with his promo from last week where he was like, if I'm not wrestling, I wish I was dead. And so when he was doing this, you could see him being like, yes, yes, this is what I love. So he needs in it. That. Right, in that mood, he's like, and you're my comrade in this. We're in the foxhole. Let's do this.
And you can kind of see Will Ospreay's just like, oh, fuck, I know. I mean, nobody's actually gone there with me yet, but this is awesome.
Yeah.
When Will Ospreay was so powered up that he just scaled that wall, it's like the exuberance of it. It's just like, yes, finally, a psycho friend.
Well, and honestly, it is also like, it's one thing for Will Ospreay to be like, I'm done with the Don Callis family, but it's another thing to actually watch him like attack them. You know, it is more believable. So it's also like, I mean, it doesn't make no sense.
It adds up in wrestling logic, I think. I think the only other thing that I wanted to say here was that, it's two things. One, I do just want to point out very funny. Kenny's ponytail, so cute when he came out. And then mid-brawl, when it was coming out of the ponytail, he looked like broken Matt Hardy. And go back and review the footage and you'll find I'm
correct. It was really terrible hair in the middle there.
But you know, I appreciate that it's hard for the men in the middle of the match.
I know it. The ponytail was so cute because he really was giving like rom-com heroine before, like when she's still in her like snippy stage where she's like I know that you lied to take me to the prom, but I'm never gonna forgive you, you know. And then when he lost the ponytail, it was definitely broken Matt Hardy.
It was very like, oh, there was a reason he put his hair in a ponytail this morning.
Yes Kenny, let's keep working on those curls. The ponytail is so cute, but we have a long way to go before we sleep, okay, buddy? And then the final thing is, just if I don't see a Young Bucks soon, I don't know who is gonna have to answer for it, but someone will.
Well, I don't know who we're gonna like get to do anything about this, because I think the Bucks are really enjoying wrestling once every 6 weeks in a country that appreciates them. So like, I'm like, what cookie do we have? What carrot do we have that we can wave to
we
be
have
like
a
come
stick.
Home?
We have a stick. We have our wraps.
We tell them we'd love to see you shirtless in America, boys.
You don't want to be shirtless in America soon. I'm going to flip my lid.
I don't
Kenny
know.
Kenny and Ospreay love taking their tops off. I'm just, you know.
Hey, you look at your big brothers for a change.
I don't know if it's, I didn't count, but I just saw on Twitter just before we got on that it's been 85 days since the Bucks have been on Dynamite. Like, I'm going to kill myself.
We can't continue to live under these conditions.
No.
Okay. We have a lot. There's a lot going on. This can't be adding to my mental stress load. Okay. She said, clutching at her head like she was getting a splitting migraine. All right. Let's move on. Speaking of tag teams, Private Party fought the Hurt Syndicate on Dynamite this week and lost. And now the Hurt Syndicate are our tag team champs. Afterwards, so I guess this is, I spottily viewed some of our missing Collision and Dynamite. What I gather is that Private Party and Mark Briscoe fought MVP Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin last week at some point. I didn't know that MVP wrestled, so that's fun. And I didn't know that Private Party and Mark Briscoe were friends.
I don't know if anyone did.
Fun. But I guess for that reason, Mark Briscoe came out to check on them after the match. But without that context, I was just kind of like, oh, Mark Briscoe's so funny. Sometimes his character is just like your only medium nice coworker. Just like, nice, he came to look, check on him. That's good.
He's also a little bit friendless lately, so maybe he's just in the market, you know?
Yeah.
I can't believe he lost Kyle. It's so sick.
Disgusting, yeah.
You ever see those videos of, like, a dog that lives with cats, and the cats will start fighting, and the dog will just come out of nowhere and be like, is no one going to break this up? Fine, like, I'll just break it up. It's like, that's Mark Briscoe. He's the only one wandering backstage being like, y'all know you can't just hit each other with screwdrivers and scissors and shit.
At least not without me around. What do you guys want to say about, it's the end of Private Party's reign. What do you want to say about that?
I think that Trish and Sarah this week had a an episode that they subtitled Trish and Sarah Address Their Enemies, which
amazing.
I love.
Amazing work, girls.
And they really got into like how unfair this reign was. And Sarah made a point that I thought like has been like echoing around in my head, which is that like it's like the Guns ended up having a better reign than they did, like, because that's even though so the Guns weird. Aren't better wrestlers, they were booked differently. And even though like everybody knew that they were transitional champs because FTR was afraid of the Acclaimed,
they ended up having a pretty fun reign, in my opinion, as transitional champs.
So Private Party didn't have to hold it long if you just did something fun with them. But the only real feud they were involved in was Top Flight versus Action Andretti and Leo Rush, which wasn't even about them. They were they were just adjacent. So, bummer.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting because I feel like Tony might have had the experience that I had where it was like watching Private Party with the Young Bucks. You're like, oh my God, like suddenly I'm so invested in Private Party. And then the second it was off screen, it was like, oh wait, I don't care anymore, you know? But yeah, I mean, they clearly shouldn't have made them the champs if they weren't ready to like at least.
And I think it's like you just don't have
run.
You don't have the option of doing that. It's like once you've made anybody the champ, no matter how like you feel about them at that point, you have to think like, okay, well, if I like, what are their strengths and what are their deficiencies, mm-hmm. and how can I book them in a way that highlights those strengths and downplays those deficiencies? Mm-hmm. Like, because I don't feel. I mean, I don't know. It's just like it's not Private Party's fault that I can't say anything new about them after this reign or like even really say like what I think of them as a tag team, because I don't think that they were booked in a way that would like allow me to access that.
Right.
That, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, right. I think the tag division has just been given like a shocking lack of like focus on it kind of.
Yeah, they did. It got crazy backburnered during the Connie and then.
And really, I mean, it's been terrible
for
like
that,
a long time now.
I know. I think it just became so glaring when it was like, oh, God, I'm seeing so many singles. To have World's End be like 90% singles matches or something was like, what are we doing here? I don't want to watch that many one-on-one men.
I know. I know. It's like, it's like there's singles matches and a few trios matches, and that's all Tony has the energy for.
Tony is like, I'm ill, girls. I'm at bath. I'm taking the waters. I have the vapors. Like, stop yelling at me.
I think he's like that about like all of Twitter. He's like, everyone stop yelling at me. It's winter and I'm tired.
Please, my migraine.
It's like the women's division got a little more attention and the tag team can't have any now. So,
oh my God.
Oh, Jesus.
There's some kind of curse on AEW where either the women's division or the tag division is good.
I think it's the curse on all of society, really. But Okay. So now Hurt Syndicate are the tag team champs. Mm-hmm. What do we know about them, and what do we want to know about them?
I was like, somebody posted in our channel that their friend had said that Shelton Benjamin has big little league coach energy, and they were like, "What do you guys think about that?" And I was like, "I don't know, because I don't really know Shelton Benjamin, even though I like him and I watched the entire Connie, and like, I'm not mad at him, but I'm like, could I say one thing about his personality? Like, I don't know if he's a little league coach. Has he spoken directly to me yet?
If you think I know.
I don't know. I've heard him.
I think he said one thing at least, but with MVP at his side.
I feel like they really need to be more careful with how they use managers, because it's like so easy for the manager to overpower the whole faction, where I feel like Don Callis did that a lot, where it's like you just don't like see Takeshita anymore or whatever. And it's like you think like Team Taz, like Taz didn't actually overpower them. Like I feel like I got a better sense of what everybody's personalities were. And it's like I feel like they just need to be thinking when they have a faction, like, how can we communicate, like, what relationship these people have to each other within the faction, like, to the manager? Just, you know, give me something to grab onto.
I guess I'm like, maybe the Hurt Syndicate don't want to give us anything to grab onto. And I don't know. Like, I just, like, maybe they aren't. I don't know. I'm not
maybe
sure.
Maybe they don't have personalities.
They don't want to show us.
Well, I am worried that it's another Samoa Joe thing where it's they're just sort of like, well, we're not trying to sell anything to you. Like the only thing that like the thing that we are strong and big, and that is enough for enough people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Is it like a symptom of coming out of a place where people were like not doing as much athletic? So it's like, yeah, I'm athletic and that's my whole thing. And it's like, well, everyone at AEW is kind of good at wrestling. So I really need a little more.
Everybody got mad this week because Shelton Benjamin was on Talk is Jericho and he said something like that the Hurt people can't, like, they didn't get to finish the story that they wanted to tell in WWE before they were disbanded. And so they came to AEW wanting to finish their story. And people got really mad because they were like, you know, AEW is not like a home for unfinished WWE stories. You should tell a new AEW story. I wouldn't even be that mad if I knew what story. Like,
yeah, I don't care. If you had a like really fun, good story that you tried to do somewhere else and couldn't, and you want to come finish it at AEW, great. I would love if you did that. I have to be able to tell that you're telling a story.
Right.
That's my only criteria. I don't even know it's a story.
Yeah. So far, it's just one loud man with his two like stone sculptures that stand next to him.
Yeah, pretty
one
much.
Loud man. Yeah, this old megaphone. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I wish they would just give us a one little thing that we could get our claws into. We were kicking around in the Social Suplex Discord. We were trying to come up with some like fun headcanons we could have about the Hurt Syndicate, but we didn't even have that much to work with. We really only have their suits and what's going on with their suits. And so we were playing in that space. But just like just a couple little details and we can run with them.
Yeah.
Okay, boys. Thank you so much. Well, I hope they have a good reign. And I hope we still have some tag teams. I don't really know who's back there. I don't know what we got in the bucket.
What if in like 3 months we're back here being like, God, I can't believe the Hurt people saved the tag division. They just really rejuvenated it.
It would be my
absolute pleasure to do a full 180 and say Hurt Syndicate gal for life.
It was actually interesting. I listened to some of our old episodes on the plane back because that's just the headspace I was in, and it was
sometimes
very funny.
You just want to hang out with your friends. Yourself.
I just wanted more time with my friends. Yeah, but it was like MJF was doing great work back then, so we were really talking him up, and it was like, wow, you know, people, our opinions of you will change. Like it sounds like we were actually quite reactive to the situation on the ground. So
we don't forget the past, but we are attuned to what's happening in the past. All right, let's check in with Toni Storm, who won the Women's Casino Gauntlet match on Dynamite last week and got a title shot against Mariah May at Grand Slam Australia. On the following Collision, Tony had an in-ring interview with Tony Schiavone, during which she continued to play the ingenue. She's just a brand new, you know, just a brand new to AEW and so happy to get this crazy opportunity. She's going to get to go to Australia. She can't believe it. She said, Mariah May is the best in the business today. She's killing it. But I haven't had the chance to introduce myself to her yet. So I was thinking next week in Jacksonville, I think it's time that she and I finally meet face to face. Mariah, was that last week? Yeah. But this was this. That was on Collision. Okay, I get it. Okay, so Mariah May then got like a little video package with a voiceover on Dynamite this week. And this didn't get recapped on AllElitewrestling.com. I'll never shut up about it. It was a really good voiceover. Yeah, like she did a great little promo where she said,
did you find someone else transcribe this or did you transcribe
it? I went and transcribed it. I went and did the work because I was rip shit when I realized that they didn't transcribe a single word of it. I was like, you lazy motherfucker, Tony Khan. Just because you have 50 jobs, you refuse to transcribe these promos in whole. Okay, so she said, I'm the most disrespected champion in AEW history. I've raised this title to a level it had never seen before. Every match, every moment, every massacre, and I made it all look so good. And how does this company repay me? By enabling a deranged woman over this video shot of Tony Storm doing the dorkiest little smile and giving a thumbs up.
Mwah. So cute.
Enabling a deranged woman for a second time. This is what you have for your woman, a woman... for your champion, a woman I played like a dysfunctional fiddle and beat without blinking an eye. Fine, let's play your game, and I'll scramble her shallow brain even worse than I did the first time. And when she's gasping for air whilst I'm grasping my gold, every fan and every person at AEW will realize one thing: you don't deserve me. Tony Storm, I can't wait to meet you.
My God. Killer.
I know.
Incredible.
As I was reading that, I kept thinking, like, I probably shouldn't read the whole thing, but then she did a really nice job
it's
with
a
that.
Really
she's got some
good
great
job.
Little some little internal rhyme scheme stuff in there. Beautiful work, Miss Mariah.
I love her being like, why is AEW allowing this deranged woman? Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
Did one of you say that it's like the vibe was a little bit that she was like, it's medical malpractice?
It's so funny, and Tony's being so funny with it too, with her whole like, I'm just so starstruck to be here, it's just incredible that this is happening, and like everyone around her just being like, oh, okay.
So where are you guys at this point on like the question of how this is going to play out, if Tony is like faking it at this point, like if you think at some point she's the mask will drop? I don't know.
I'm still putting my eggs in that bucket at some point. I think Sarah has said that like what she wants is at some point the mask is going to slip and Tony's going to go, it was the role of a lifetime.
Oh my God, I would die. I love that.
The fun thing is that like I feel like I'm very interested if she's faking it, but I'm also very interested if she's not, you know, like I think it's really fun
for sure.
Way, which is like so great for a storyline.
I mean, you could do a great beat, and actually she's like probably up to it in terms of like the specific hammy kind of acting. You could do a great beat where she gets another hit to the head and suddenly remembers and takes in like what's happening to her, and every emotion is like playing across her face. Like that would be so sexy too.
yeah she's honestly like doing really great acting as this like ingenue role. Like I keep being like, wow, it's really even just her body language is different and
her face, like when she was when she was talking to Harley this week, like I was just watching her face and I was like, and that's timeless Tony. That's the same woman. They're the same.
Yeah. It's like she literally looks younger, I think, just from how she's holding herself, which is incredible.
Yeah.
She's really fucking good. I don't know. I think this is a great, I love this psychosexual stew, and I can't wait to keep supping of it all through the next month. When is this show again? Have we figured that out yet or no?
It's on a February. Saturday. Did you guys know it was on a Saturday? I thought it was a Dynamite.
I don't know anything. What do you mean?
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
I mean, they probably did that so that it's like watchable in America at whatever time.
That's true. Well, will it even be? What's the time difference? It's like 14 hours.
Yeah, something. It depends on where you are, I guess.
I think so. I'd remember. I was just there.
I was like, you're the only one with practical experience. I don't know. Converting.
And I had to do the math quite a bit while I was there because I keep not changing my computer clock anywhere I go. And then every time I look at the clock, I just have to do like, what time is it here? I'm accessing my mental calculator. Okay, some other takeaways I have here from the Women's Casino Gauntlet. Julia Hart missed it. I guess I put this later, too. Julia Hart has now missed Harley Cameron and Jamie Hayter within the past month or 2 months, but neither of them has shown any signs of it as of yet. So I don't think that there's much of a grand unified theory of missed. I don't know how it works.
No, the thing is that, like, I don't need them to tell me exactly how it works, but I want to know that they know how it works. You know what I mean? No. And I'm not confident that they do.
They said it works when you need it to. It's a MacGuffin.
Yeah, I know. It should have consistent rules that they follow, and I don't want them to spell those out, but I do want them to follow the same rules every time. Yeah. And even if those rules are, like, if someone's heart is pure enough, they can fight it off. Like, that's okay, but we need to, like, you know.
But you have, I don't feel that, I don't feel like that Jamie Hayter and Harley Cameron would be able to easily fight off this.
No, like that worked for Willow. And even Willow had to, like, took some time. Yeah, so.
Well. Willow and Stat apparently shared a very nice moment during the Women's Casino Gauntlet, and they're becoming friends again, and we can't get into all that. I don't think we have time to unpack all that. And then Megan Bain finally showed up, and at some point, when we see her wrestle again, we'll give her a new woman rating. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay, amazing.
Although, I will say that I did laugh. Was it Mercedes, I think, was like, we don't need any more big women or something like that. She said something insane.
Mercedes, that's all we need.
So I welcome a big woman into my life.
Please join us. To any big women listening, come in. I'm quite at my leisure. Okay, also in the women's division, so we had Julia Hart fought Harley Cameron on Collision and won and missed her. We don't know, and no sign of that. Well, fine. And then on this week's Dynamite, Harley popped into... Mercedes Moné was, like, just roaming backstage being like, four beautiful belts, all for me, and what could I be doing with any of these? Who can know? And Harley came in with her guitar and played a little song to be like, maybe you fight me in Australia. Wouldn't that be so fun and amazing? And I have beautiful boobs. Have you noticed? And I said, I have noticed, and they are absolutely entrancing. And Mercedes was like, well, you actually haven't even won a match on TV, so I doubt very much that I'll be fighting you at Grand Slam Australia. And Harley was kind of like, that's so fair. We can't argue with that. And later she wandered in to an interview that Toni Storm was having backstage, and she was like, oh, I'm not going to get to fight in Australia. That's so unfortunate. I am Australian. And Toni Storm was like, oh, don't give up on yourself, babe. Like, I bet that you can still fight there. And then they went into this little Australiana dialect tangent, which was so funny to watch them do. I was quite delighted by it. And
I recognized like every third word, I would say.
I got a lot of it, but then I read a transcript and there was some stuff in there that I was like, yeah, I didn't understand it and still don't know what it means, to be perfectly frank. And so we'll see what happens for Harley down under.
Could you... That was you getting possessed by a little demon.
That was Manolo came out of your mouth right there.
Manolo just popped out of nowhere. And said,
I guess I was looking at his name right there, so maybe I just zoned out and I was like, God, what would Manolo say? We'll see what happens to them down under.
Down under.
Anything else you want to say about the old women's division?
I really like Harley Cameron.
I love her. She's so funny.
Yeah, she's really so fun. Come a long way.
She's like ended up in such a great place where it's like she really feels I'm just like, that's such a fun character that I believe. And in some ways, some of what she's doing is not that different than some of the stuff she was doing right when she showed up. But I don't think that QT Marshall's TMZ parody was a great venue in which to meet Harley Cameron.
No, I would say when she was trying to sing romantic songs to Anthony Bowen.
That was in retrospect, that's hilarious. Yeah, but at the time it was weird. Yeah.
But
for very on like, board. I think her whole gimmick is, it's not the kind of gimmick that is helped by having QT Marshall nearby. You know,
no,
QT Marshall's
not.
Nearby. Like, I get a little protective and I'm like, QT, get away from her. Stop. No, you shouldn't even be seeing this. This is a beautiful woman and she's just for girls. Sorry, QT Marshall, I'm sure you're fine.
Going through some of this, I'm like, wow, the women's division has some really fun stuff going on in it. Like, I feel like wrestling needs to focus a little more on being fun in all its little aspects, you know? Just like...
You shan't get any argument from me, Anne. I think that wrestling should focus on fun a little more. Speaking of fun... we got a House of Black
program. Now, Allie, can you recap all of the events that took place? Allie, I just forgot a lot of the things that happened.
Can
you just remind me?
I went to elitewrestling.com where Tony does the recaps, and this is all we got for this promo, which in fairness is like they did kind of capture the important stuff, but I have no idea what else happened. Brody King, Buddy Matthews, and Julia Hart said they had no gods, no masters, just violence. When they bark together.
They did literally say both
they
those
did.
Sentences.
They did. So,
and it is funny because it does kind of imply that Malakai Black was their god and master before, but now he's gone or turned
into
a dog.
It's like you were the dogs and he was the man, but now you're like homeward bound, like free dogs. Did you like what I soft fur, big barks, can't lose, baby? It is absolutely bongo to come on my A. I hate that Brody King barks.
I find it
so disturbing. It makes me hiss like a cat, which I guess is I'm just like, that's repulsive. Stop doing that. Gross. But he's like, no, let's lean into it so much. And in fact, I'm going to infect other people with my disgusting barks. But then to come out, and I guess it's like, it's kind of the ultimate weird face turn to just be like, oh, no, the barking thing's really fun. When we bark together.
It is, it's like the motto that if you're watching like an animated movie about dogs, like a corporation or something.
It also just keeps making me think of that part in Mighty Ducks 2,
yes.
I think,
Ducks.
Where he's just like, he says it, like, and he's trying to start the chant, and he's like, dogs bark together. Dogs bark together. Come on, everybody.
Come on.
Dogs bark together.
I don't know about any of that, you know, but I guess just like, good for them. I'm sorry that their dog walker quit. I'm sorry that now they're going to have to take themselves to Central Park themselves.
They're just little dogs walking with their leash in their mouth. You don't feel a little bad for them?
Of course I find that relatable. That's us every week. That's us every week, girls. Each of us take one other leash in our little mouths and we walk each other through the park, of course. Good luck to them. And who knows, maybe they will in time wish that they had let perfect golden retriever Will Ospreay join their kennel club.
If only they had let him complete his barking audition, yeah.
Somewhere Will Ospreay is like, thank God they didn't take me up on it. I wouldn't have been available for Kenny.
He's like, I left all these messages and everyone called me back all at once. All right, let's move on. So I guess last week, I didn't see a lot of this, but I actually don't even know what I'm about to describe. I guess last week, Jericho had a backstage interview with Lexi Nair he knew that they were going to have this 12-man tag that everyone was really, really mad about. I know that. And then, but I didn't see anything else about it. So then I looked up who was in the 12-man tag and I thought, yeah, it doesn't look like a great match, but kind of normal given what's going on. And kind then I read the description of the match, and I was like, I don't know, kind of a normal match, I think. But it went clearly, it was the straw that broke the old camel's back for many. And, you know, I respect that. I can't understand it really because I didn't see it, but I respect it.
It was so interesting to me because, yeah, looking at it, I was like, yeah, that's kind of like what a collision match is. But now we're mad, you know, where it's like, but I think everyone, you know, they just have their own special little guys, and everyone's feelings about that's the promotion true. Are based on where their special little guys are. And I'm kind of in a position where I'm like, well, I think the quality's been about the same for like, you know, 2 years. I think because we all, of course, all of us as a group, the IWC, we know that the product has suffered since Chuck Taylor has been a less important part of it. But
that.
I thought we'd all come to terms with that by now. You know, guys, it's been quite a few years.
You know, we've had our widow's weeds on for quite a while now. So
I think that people were having a reaction to Mox and Jericho tagging together without any real like explanation about why they would team up. But I my thing with that, I was like, oh, I mourned that already. It was when Kenny and Jericho teamed
my
up.
God, that's so true.
I went through that and I came out the other side and said, sometimes people just got to tag together. I don't know what to tell you.
And sometimes when those things happen, you get the most beautiful promo that AEW's ever given
exactly.
us. So yeah, I think
Big
that's
Billy
the thing
Starks.
That keeps confusing me the most about like how down everyone is right now. Cause it's like, it's not that I think the things they're mad about are like going well, but like to me, I've been much madder at other times, like Kenny and Jericho teaming, like the end of MJF's reign, like Danielson and Swerve. Like I've been really mad at those times. Whereas right now I'm kind of like, well, you know, like Death Riders is in kind of a soggy middle, but that's like pretty typical.
And it's like it's the bleak midwinter, so I'll let it ride. We'll just deal with that later.
I'm also not the other thing about like the Death Rider stuff is I'm kind of like, well, can you envision like anything else? Like, yeah, like I kind of wish that like Danny Garcia and like Jungle Boy were on TV more, but like they weren't ever going to be in the main event scene. I don't really know what else I would do with the main event scene right now. Like,
yeah,
probably put Hangman in it maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah, and it's like it also like hasn't been going on for that long compared to other things I've hated. You know? So like,
you know, it's all relative,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is nonsensical. I don't see any reason why this current iteration of Mox would ever want to team up with Jericho, but
I think
at the same time...
I think that was the big, like, key to it, where they were like, if his, like, whole cult leader persona is, like, I hate, like, stupid gimmick stuff, I want pure... madness for madness, and then he encounters the learning tree and says, get over here on my side.
But then at the same time, it's like Jericho is also a cult leader, so on some level I'm like, can't you see their eyes? And I guess they were in the same room together, but I haven't seen it. Can't you see their eyes locking, and it's just like game recognize game, like you're running a murder suey cult just like me. Well,
those are some workers there. Those are some political players.
Can't you give it to Jericho a little bit, be like, nobody could stay mad at him, come on. Jericho did it again.
I know that the IWC started talking about the Jericho Vortex, and then Jericho took possession of the Jericho Vortex, and it's like the Jericho Vortex is truly just his personality, which is irresistible like in the long term, you know? It's like for brief
all who
periods,
stand against Jericho eventually
it,
will fall.
Yeah, in these old episodes we were not huge Jericho fans, but here we are today.
Yeah, you know, so he'll get you. Like, you don't know that your brain is being poisoned, and it's kind of like, it's like when a cactus dies and then it just collapses in on itself like goo. That's what comes for all of us with Mr. Jericho. And as you know, because as I said repeatedly in the schedule, I only included this section because I wanted to say Jericho looks fuckable again. I just want to talk about Chris Jericho looking fuckable. He looks really beautiful. He looks really good as the King of New York.
I'm honestly, like, still loving his little two-minute segments, and it's very funny to me that everyone else is so done with it, because I'm like, it takes, you know, no time.
They're so short.
Big Bill's killing it, you know.
I'll watch anybody do anything for 2 minutes.
Yeah,
like, yeah, for
it's
sure.
It's like, it's no MJF, you know, okay. It's fine.
When you go 13 minutes, that's when I'm like, you need to stop.
Jericho used to, and now...
He did used to.
I think... I love, as I was doing the schedule, it suddenly occurred to me to think about it this way, and I was like, oh, he's really my special boy, where it's just like every old man on TV now is taking up so much time getting lambasted, begging to be killed in the manner to which they've become accustomed, et cetera, et cetera. And Chris Jericho is just like, I just show up looking younger than ever for 2 minutes a week, and nobody's mad at me right now. So busy being mad at everybody else. And I said, it's so true. You are the least problematic old man on screen most weeks, yeah, for sure.
It's so funny to picture Chris Jericho at the back of a mob going, yeah, kill the old man. Let's and find maybe him and kill him, old boys.
Maybe he's looking so young because he's sucking all the essence out of everyone. And yeah,
our powerful energy vampire. He mm-hmm. says, yes, they are so angry at everybody else, but I grow in strength right under their noses. A shadow soon shall fall across the room.
And when you think about the length of the segments he used to get during feuds that went on 6 months longer than they should have, it's like, what does anybody complain about with this version of Jericho?
I mean, to be honest, like, that's what people should be saying all the time. And, like, if you're mad at something Jericho's been doing, he's done worse in the past.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So much worse. He's just so benign now. It's like, you can't be mad, and he looks really good. And so I see him, I think, like, wow, I'd love to kiss him. If he wanted to, if he ever wanted to, I'd love to kiss him. Anyway.
And he did say that Mox had, that they've known each other a long time for like 20 years, and that Mox gave him a scar above his eye that he still has. And I was like, oh, really? Well,
tell me more.
That's interesting. So you just carry that with you all the time.
I think, yeah. And you did kind of say, like, I don't want him to kiss, but, you know, it's kind of juicy. And I said, whoa, wait a second. What if he did, though? Whoa, hang on a second.
It's like, hey, if anybody wants to kiss, I wouldn't stop them.
This is the pitch. It's the Brady Bunch, but it's about two cults joining together because their cult leaders are having a fantastically weird sexual affair in the great city
and
of New York.
Extremely different cults. It really is like what are the two, like, most, I mean, it is like next, like a multi-level marketing, like, kind of cult combined with like a Heaven's Gate, you know,
yeah,
like a,
yeah,
just like.
Wow. I think that Chris Jericho should, okay, no, I think it might be problematic. Okay, I'm going to say it. Should I say it? No, if you say it's problematic, cut it afterwards, okay? Mm-hmm. Heaven's Gate is bad, obviously. It's like really, obviously. It's really bad.
Great disclaimer.
Yeah, I'd love to hear the
so
butt.
Important to start there. To be clear, I don't support cults.
Cults are bad. Heaven's Gate especially, where everybody died / was killed. That's very bad, and it's not cool. And that is why, unfortunately, I never, ever, ever would purchase any of the super fucking rad Heaven's Gate replica badges that they made say Heaven's Gate away team. And they look so fucking cool. And sometimes I just Google them and I just look at them and I think I never would buy it. It's cults are very bad. It's very bad that this happened to these people. I'm really sorry. It is such a cool badge. Anyway, I just thought that Chris Jericho could start selling badges. That's it. Cult badges. Fun cult
badges.
Thing
is, I know that if we could get into his DMs and suggest this, he would be on board.
Immediately.
If we could get into his DMs, we could find a way, I think.
Well, as we know, wrestlers don't exist on the same internet that we exist on.
Yeah, no one would send him this clip or anything. That would be crazy.
Well, their phone would blow up. We've covered it. Don't do it.
We've covered that. They can't listen to us on account of the viruses that we've
had. I just think they'd be so cool.
The federal law. Yeah.
Little, like, learning tree. But it's like, you really want that space theme. I wish you could take the learning tree into a space. Heaven's Gate away team was really just like, damn, it sucks that you were a cult. You should have just been like a cool TV show. That would have rocked.
TV show. I know. And I actually watched a documentary on them one time and realized I didn't know that much about them. And it was just kind of a bummer because they weren't even, like, being run by, like, a narcissistic sociopath. It was just, like, unmedicated mental illness, really, it seemed like.
It's really sad. Yeah. So this is a good segment. You know, it is, as we've repeatedly said, it's really sad and bad. But they had a great graphic designer somehow.
Yeah, this patch really is great.
It's so good. Wow. Okay. Well, Chris Jericho,
this
that's a free idea.
This is kind of like FTR where we're like, yeah, they're rancid demons that ruin our lives, but every fucking time they come out with great merch.
Yeah, FTR is much like Heaven's Gate. I think that's our takeaway.
Oh my God, I wish they were on the away team. Anyway. Oh, Mox cut this promo. Speaking of Nexium, Mox cut this promo on Dynamite where he said he would throw Adam Copeland's carcass on top of a pile of dead animals. And then he said, maybe the next time you go to the doctor, Cope, you get some bad news. Maybe it's a worst case scenario. And in that case, I won't lose even a little bit of sleep over it. I don't sleep much anyway. I don't have time to sleep. Okay, two things. A, didn't get recapped correctly. That line was cut. Tony, I'm on to your ass. Two, I heard it and I was, I really can't justify it, but it's just because I keep thinking about cults when I watch him. And I thought, Keith Raniere, Nexium, Midnight Volleyball, Mox, John Moxley. John Moxley up all night, making his whole faction stay up all night playing Midnight Volleyball. That's not, like, hey, it's not nothing.
It's not nothing. And it loops back around because, like, when we started watching, we were seeing a lot of Mox in his old gear with the little boy shorts and the knee pads. And we always said he looked like a girls volleyball player in a very sexy way. And I would love for Mox, girl volleyball player / cult leader, to come back with 2 a.m. volleyball.
When I think about how good life was when he was wearing those little knee pads and those little shorts and he was the hottest player on the girls volleyball team, and he like would skip practice sometimes and just like make out with people under the bleachers.
Ooh. Yeah,
a shudder ran it through me. Well, what are we talking about here?
Just how great cults are. Yeah.
And how Allie really loves them.
How aesthetically great cults are.
Sometimes there's just something about a cult. Not Nexium. Nexium aesthetically pretty bad, but terrible. The Midnight Volleyball stuff, when you take it away from the Keith Raniere, kind of fun. But actually when Keith Raniere was there, really not fun and very difficult to understand why anybody would do it.
No part of it was being done. Yeah. You know Oneida silverware was invented by a sex cult?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
You told me that before.
Yeah.
That's a fun fact.
It's a fun fact. America is really
just a little nugget. And they're everywhere.
Great, you know?
Morally dubious, aesthetically great. Sometimes. Anyway.
Sometimes.
Well, whoa, ladies. Not all the time. Well, and what else happened on here? 2.0 are back together. We don't really know how. They did fight the United Kingdom. This is in this section for some reason that we can't get into. It's in the section, and it happened, and we'll see that later.
Adam I'm Copeland, excited, though.
Yeah,
I'm clear. Happy. That's good.
Very I'm happy that
marriage
he lives.
For people to be remarried in this time?
We have to reunite some of these tag teams. We need some remarriages to happen.
And they are...
And for Danny to have a home again? Yeah, with two
of
parents?
Course. Of course,
you know how
I
feel about two-parent households.
I hope he hasn't been on TV because he's been so busy parent-trapping his dads.
Oh, my God.
And I can't wait to give him a round of applause for it next time I see him and say, good for you, young boy.
Over Christmas, Danny Garcia went to sleepaway camp. He met his identical twin.
Yes.
Here we are. Great work.
Imagine the pop you would pop if you truly didn't know that a wrestler was an identical twin for like years and then suddenly their identical twin showed up. I wish it could happen.
It'd be so fun. If Danny Garcia suddenly came to the ring with a second Danny Garcia, oh my God.
It would be huge. I really could not get over it.
Yeah.
I think I'd be like Lucille Bluth when his face shows up. What's his name? Not Glenn.
Gene Parmesan.
Gene Parmesan! And I wish I could feel that. Just the way that she looks in those scenes. Okay. Cope and Pac fought. That was the main event last night. And it was pretty boring, to be quite honest with you. And afterward, afterwards we cut backstage and Mox was doing pity BDSM on the Rock and Roll Express again. And had he tied up FTR too? I didn't even know.
Yeah. I didn't notice that they were in the room until someone on the Discord was like, and Cash was there. And I was like, and Cash was there?
Egg? Yeah. His mouth was taped over it. Yeah. It wasn't a very big close up on them. Why does Rock and Roll Express only show up to get tied up? Like, are they just really into
BDSM? They heard all those times that we said no kink shaming at AEW and they said bet.
Finally, a safe space for us.
I don't know, but it is very funny. Like, just that they just get, like, tied up is so funny. It's like no impact play. Just well, I think that's enough of that. Jay White. Oh, right. So they had this match. Cope won, and then the Death Riders came out and surrounded Pac and... or surrounded Cope. I can do this, guys. Surrounded Cope. It. And then Jay White ran out to save Cope for some reason. Well, there's a couple reasons that I can produce, shall I?
Yeah.
One, had that match with Mox, still mad at Mox.
Yeah.
Two, from New Zealand, presumably going to get a little match in Australia.
Mm-hmm. I like how your reasons are like one kayfabe, one non-kayfabe. Yeah.
One for me, one for you. One for me, one for you. That's all I got, I think. And yeah. I do think he canonically hates FTR, who are involved in this, but...
I hate when they do runouts like this where you're having to do, like, three-dimensional... Like, you're doing math meme to be like, wait, why would he? And then you're like, oh, I guess he's still mad about the Mox thing.
It's funny, like, especially in this scenario, because my understanding of Jay White is that, like, he might not run out to save his own mother. So, it's like... You've really got to do some math to make this one work.
And I also can't stand beatdowns like this where somebody runs out and then just immediately makes no impact.
Yeah.
just immediately is dead for good. Okay.
I do hate that too, but then I kind of enjoyed how, like, pathetically ineffectual Jay White seemed, and that endeared him to me, and I thought, like, wow, look at that little rat. He thought he could do something, but he couldn't. He's just been knocked out. I liked that. anything to say about Yuta's facial hair?
Oh, my God. The bangs in his eyes, I was losing my mind.
He looks like a cartoon character. That doesn't look real.
No, it's so funny.
He looks like he's going to become Cousin It. Like, it's like, is he just going to keep growing
that?
What's
the end game? Yeah.
Where does this stop?
And it is like, what are you trying to express about your character right now? I mean, I like it.
Maybe he's hiding from his cult leader. Like, he's having doubts.
He keeps getting hit for, like, making eye contact in a way that Mox doesn't like. So.
Look away, peasant. I wouldn't mind if Mox leaned into that kind of Mad King vibe a little more and started ordering people, you know, it's like, don't look at my eyes. Like, why aren't you looking at me? Like, and that you could see, like, Claudio and Yuta trying to dance around it.
What would rule is if Yuta and Marina were, like, trying to dance around, but, like, Claudio's thriving on it more and just getting, he's like, the more nonsensical the orders, the more I thrive.
Claudio was like, this is a challenge. So I am happy to meet
my king.
And their relationship is becoming more and more unhingedly sexual as each week goes by. And you keep being like, I didn't think that this is who Claudio was, but, like, clearly the orders are doing it for
That'd be so delightful, especially when they're having all these BDSM sessions with, like, OC and Darby. And then in the meantime, it's like if Mox and Claudio were developing some kind of 24/7 master thing.
Like, we're like, wow, it's strange. It's like things aren't, like, as sexy in the ring as they could be. And it's like, yeah, because what's going on with Claudio is somehow, like, really
And other people crazy. Backstage are like, yeah, so I was talking to Claudio, and I said something about his faction mate, and he was like, you're supposed to call him my master. And I just don't feel comfortable.
Claudio's backstage wearing, like, one of those, like, special collars that are, like, it kind of looks like a necklace, but if you know, you know.
Oh, my God. I'm really so happy imagining Mox and Claudio just, like, getting so wrapped up in some weird semi-sex game they're playing where it's like Mox gives an order and Claudio does it and then Mox corrects him and Claudio corrects himself. And then it's like the camera just pans over and it's like Yuta and Pac standing there. And Pac looks so wet and just like defeated. And Yuta really is just, his hair is down to his chin in front of his face. And it's like,
so he doesn't have to look at it.
It's just like, when will my real dads come pick me up? I don't want to be here anymore. I don't like it here anymore. Did we solve the Death Rider story?
Yeah, I think so.
I think everyone are really going to like what we've done here.
Book it, Tone. Oh my God. Okay, wow, and we still have more stuff to talk about.
That really should have been our grand finale, our little overrun, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. All right. Last week on Dynamite, Ricochet came out for an in-ring promo and got steel-chaired by Prince Nana and then chased off by Swerve, who came out swinging a big steel chain. This week, Swerve fought A.R. Fox and won. Afterwards, Ricochet appeared on the big screen and accused Swerve of being a bully in his little glasses and said, next week you will all be forced to listen to me because I have a lot to get off my chest. Which I loved. It was very much to me giving that small little villain from The Incredibles.
That's true.
And he revealed that he was holding, I mean, he wasn't holding Prince Nana captive. He just had like shoved Prince Nana up against a wall or something. Not exactly.
Yeah.
Just he had the scissors violence. Up against his neck.
Oh, the scissors.
He had scissors up against his neck, but it wasn't up against a wall. Nana could have just screedled.
Like, I think there were kind of some like production cases behind
it. Scissors are potentially close to an artery, a necessary jugular, perhaps. Then you don't want to move too fast then, because we need that, Leah. We need our jugular.
You know? I was watching the segment, and no shade to it. It was a great segment, but I was in the middle of it, and I was like, I have to watch Hangman tell Nana that he's going to steal his weed. And so in the middle of that segment, I muted it and pulled that up and then laughed to myself because the way Nana capers, he goes, no, you're not. You're not.
That's really the kind of feedback. If it could be completely anonymized, it wouldn't not be helpful for Tony to be able to just see like what people were doing elsewhere on the internet during at various points in his show to be like, was this working or not? Like that's kind of working because it's like, yeah, you went to watch more of the product. That's amazing. There's things that he could see me doing that he'd be like,
I think wondering we've lost some interest.
Do you think people are liking this?
He would have been pretty perplexed, I think, by the Googling you were doing about the children's book.
Yeah,
but
he's like,
but it is relevant.
Pause this. Okay. Oh, yes. Okay. So then later we got a backstage promo from Swerve. I think he had repossessed Nana at that point. Mm-hmm. And Nana had come to no harm. I believe he looked okay.
Yeah, he looked fine.
That's good. So that's kind of a lot of people are doing violence these days that doesn't really have repercussions. I will say that. You know? True. But I wasn't mad about it because Swerve was really fucking pissed off. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of pacing. And I believe he called himself the lion that will get his hands on the rodent, which I loved. Although I hope they don't end up on Mox's pile of animal carcasses. Be careful. Mr. Big Game Hunter Moxley is just around the corner. So be very careful. What'd you guys think?
Ricochet's character that he's doing now is like really working for me. Like, I just think it's so funny. It's like different from what other people are doing. It's such like a good, like cowardly heel. You know, he's like an alpha man, but like it's, you know, a little dweeb. Yeah. I think people were saying that Swerve kind of helped him figure this out or work it out, which like makes sense to me because Swerve is so good at characterization and storytelling, but it's like, oh, this is killer. Like Swerve should be working with everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, truly.
And in the Bleacher Report recap this week, they said something about him where they were like, Swerve remains the gold standard for stardom in AEW. His world title reign elevated him to the top of the business, and he remains in that spot, making every segment matter. And that, like, that last part is the part that really got me, where it's like, no matter, like, how, like, what he's supposed to do in any given segment, he makes it matter. And I think somehow he's gotten Ricochet there, too, where Ricochet, he could show up for 30 seconds, and that 30 seconds matters. It, like, mm-hmm. really, like, you're going to pay attention to it. So it's, like, it's almost like Swerve understands, like, the economy of time. You know what I mean? Like, he's not wasting any of it.
He's really the king of making the most of every opportunity. Because, like, you look at his career in AEW, and it's like, oh, he really kind of got cut off at different points, you know, but really, like, kept going or had things going badly and then brought it back. Like, it's just like, you know, he lost a lot to people and it's like it really worked. And
I think it's really fun and interesting to have, like, enough that he's been at AEW for long enough now that you can look back at all his feuds. And I really would say, like, every time he's in a feud, it might not end up being my favorite feud, but, like, he'll make it about something. Like, he's always clearly, like, doing something with his character and, like, wants the other person to be doing something with theirs. Which is really, again, the bar's on the floor. But that's really cool. I really like that.
You get the feeling that Swerve could give an elevator pitch for any single one of his feuds.
Yeah. Don't you feel like it's crazy, too? Because I feel like he's so cool, and it seems so effortless for him to be cool, but he's not boring, which is kind of hard, because I feel like a lot of wrestlers come out there, like, wanting to look cool, and then they end up being, like, kind of giving me nothing, whereas Swerve is, like, interestingly, like, vulnerable enough to be, for me to be interested, well, while still being, like, a very cool guy.
It is a character note to be, like, I have a chip on my shoulder, like, you know, it's like, I'm cool, but I'm also, like, I'm trying to prove something to you. Like, you know, there's enough layers there to make it interesting. It's really nice, and it's like I wanted to like Ricochet so much because he has this long relationship with our own special son, and so I said, like, I want to love your child, my grandchild. I need to love him. But he hadn't been doing anything, you know. It's like he was just kind of showing up, like, oh, you want me to, I have to give a promo, I'll say something, I guess. But, like, it does feel like in this feud it's like, oh, say something about something. I have an idea of, like, what the whole thing is about, and then I say something, and then I'll kind of contribute to that, and it's like, great, this is perfect. You're killing it.
And last week he did a promo where he came out to the ring, walked around in a circle, glaring at the crowd who were booing him, and then just left. And I was like, that's incredibly effective. That's
so funny.
So funny. And it's like the kind of thing that's so fun when you're in the crowd. Like, and I feel like Swerve's really good at this too, where it's like using the crowd and the crowd reactions really well. Which actually, the crowd started chanting Swerve's house at Ricochet, which I was like, on the one hand, I kind of love it. But on the other hand, that's special. That's for Hangman. That's to needle Hangman.
Hey,
don't cheat on Hangman with Ricochet.
Ricochet hasn't done anything to his house. All right, let's move on. Oh, could it be our final topic? But there's so much in here, so... I guess last week. Wow, we saved the most fun for last, huh? I guess last week, MJF and Jeff Jarrett had a really long promo segment that was extremely misogynistic. And I wrote that, and then I went and I read the promo segment, and wow, they certainly didn't censor some of the stuff I almost wish they would have. Well, no, it's good to... Tony, don't stop. I didn't mean that. I never want you to censor anything, but it was kind of like, wow, you didn't think you should censor this? That troubles me a little bit.
Really? You cut all the meat out of, like, the Mariah and Tony segments, but this you're, like, in full. I will render, like, it in full.
You kept this line where MJF basically was like, I'm going to use your wife sexually and then ship her back to you in a box. Like, I wouldn't. I guess if I were censoring things my wrestlers had said, I'd probably start there, but I guess that's just me.
I wouldn't be proud of it.
That this was allowed to go on the air is wild to me. Like, Jeff Jarrett, who is the baby face, called MJF's mother and girlfriend a quote-unquote call girl, which is, like, honestly
really
so antiquated.
Yeah.
It's almost not even offensive. You're just like, am I supposed to be mad about that? Because, like, is this 1975? Like,
are we employing this term in some way? I don't understand.
He's, like, not even that old. Like, he's Gen X. He's not JR, you know? But it's, like, the same thing with JR saying Jezebels, where you're just kind of like, huh, didn't expect to hear that.
It wasn't... The whole situation wasn't great. I didn't enjoy the read-through. So then, on this week's Dynamite, we had this backstage segment where Karen Jarrett was like, babe, can I get a word? Hey, Jeff, can I talk to you for a minute? that wasn't you, babe. I know your heart. That was not you. And Jeff was like, okay, I gotta go.
He literally like interrupted her, kissed her on the forehead and walked out without letting her finish her sentence. I was like, wow, I'm glad they're trying to convince us he's not a misogynist.
It's like, if it were on purpose as a heel move, it'd be quite effective.
Yeah, very effective, yeah.
Just like, okay, shut up. I gotta go. And he came out to give an in-ring promo about wearing an onion on his belt, which was a style at the time.
My God.
As I typed this, I was like, I'm not trying to be ageist. I hope I'm not being ageist. Anne's eyes went so wide at me. Do you think I am being ageist?
Oh, no. I was doing it like, my God, this whole, everything that's happening is terrible. Not anything you're nervous. Saying.
Imagine if this is how you find out that Anne's like, yeah, I thought you were ageist this whole time.
I'm getting really sick of your ageism, Allie.
But it is, like, just something about the cadence of these promos he's giving is just so, like, and at the time, that was when it was in another, and there was another man at the time who also had a pony, and, well, at the time, ponies were used for, and you're just like, babe, we've simply got to focus up on the here and now, because if it were a little more concrete of an anecdote of, like, this one specific time, I hope he didn't do that and I zoned it out. Well, no. Who knows?
No, but he didn't. It was all over the place.
It's crazy. Everything was crazy. The whole time you're just like, why is this happening? Like, why is Jeff Jarrett getting all this in-ring time?
It's, I don't know.
Wild. So fucked up that they got the world, like, I think universally panned segment. Like, everybody seemed angry at it. And so Jeff Kid Jarrett got to come out to do it again. Like, I mean, it's, I know, crazy. He didn't do it as misogynist, but, like, not, I'm like, as. How do you get rewarded with more promo time? That's fucked up.
Did you see also? And it happens to white men every day.
I think that's Jeff Jarrett's career.
Yeah.
Did you see that one dirt sheet said that MJF had written Jeff Jarrett's segment, and then another one said that actually MJF said Jeff Jarrett shouldn't be doing that anymore. So I'm glad they're both like leaking things.
That did the worst part. MJF's was grosser. I mean, yeah. It was very gross, but...
Yeah, they both should be thrown in the trash. Like, I'm done with both of them.
We don't need these men.
No. It is the only barely enjoyable part about this is that they're both terrible people, and it's very funny for both of them to be trying to use dirt sheets against each other.
Exactly.
Who do you think leaked first? Do you think that like MJF was on Twitter in somebody's DMs as he was going down the stairs?
Yeah, from they're like diving backstage already. Wasn't me.
God.
Jeff Jarrett did scare the absolute shit out of, I think, all of us in the middle of this interview, where he's talking about the onion on his belt and he's being like, and that was when I was dealing with the king, Jerry Lawler, and all of us said, oh God, another, no, please, no, you couldn't possibly show him to us. I hate you, Tony, I hate you. If you make me meet this man, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
He said it, I genuinely was like about to be like, we're about to hear some theme music and some old man is gonna limp out and be like, I'm here.
How did you save our mental health, Leah?
I Googled him, and he has a WWE contract. Thank he God. Can't come out. They can't Thank make God. Him come out.
If you could Thank have, God. If you could
send him over there with Hulk Hogan,
the huge sighs of relief in our separate homes of just like, oh God, they can never make him. Thank God, we never have to meet him. We never have to meet the King Jerry Lawler. Okay, so then JJ was shouting that he wants to beat MJF's ass in the woodshed, but also he feels grateful and inspired that we as the fans have given him the gift of, quote, a 57-year-old man believing in himself that he can become the AEW World Heavyweight Champion, end quote, which he can't. So
it's pretty wild. Like, I feel like once you're 57, you're kind of out of the realm of believing in your dreams, or you should be. And also, like, the fact that all of this is about the world champion, like, he and MJF were also, like, yelling at each other, like, I should be world champ. No, I should be. And it's like, neither of you have it. Like, go take it up with Moxley if you're so mad. Like, why is this happening? And Jeff Jarrett has been basically, like, a low-card jobber this whole time. So it's wild.
It's wild nonsense.
For this to be taken seriously.
I do want to say, to avoid us getting canceled, I think there's lots of dreams you can still believe in at the age of 57, just maybe not being the AEW Men's World Heavyweight Champion.
That's true.
Sometimes you got to get a different dream. Anne, I knew your heart, Anne. And I wanted you to know make I'm sure not that just the listeners heart, yeah. knew it too.
To your point, Anne, as you said that about him not winning that much, I was like, he's not even the winner in his own faction. Jay no, Lethal is.
I know.
Don't he you was think there, anybody... like,
to have somebody the best friends could beat. That was his yeah. role. Like,
if we were going to have someone in his faction randomly get granted a title shot, you'd think it'd yeah, be Jay Lethal.
Yeah,
for sure
Jay Lethal. Yeah.
His faction have been extremely quiet since they tried to talk him out of retiring, and he responded by being like, I'll never retire. In fact, I want to fight the world champion. It's like, there's someone just like watching on the monitor, and then it's like they're slinging each other like, well, that's not what I want. That's not what I meant. Did you say this to him? I didn't tell him to do that. I just thought maybe he'd like want to do some exhibition matches every now and then. I wasn't trying to tell him, like, he's 57. You can't have a dream anymore, buddy. Okay, so he called out John Moxley. Claudio Castagnoli came out instead and was like, if you want Mr. Mox, you got to go through me, which feeds our earlier headcanon pretty nicely, I think. And JJ was like, Claudio, please, you know my heart. And it's that I must fight you and I will fight you and get my world title shot. And Claudio is like, that's fine with me. And then, well, this isn't in order because I put it in the wrong place. But also, I guess on Collision or last week's, probably Collision, there was a backstage interview with Jeff Jarrett that Dustin Rhodes interrupted, which is like old man inception. It's like, how many layers deep are we now? To say, like, how many years have we known each other? I'm here to tell you that I'm 110% behind you. And want you to go after your dream. Well, he's not allowed to have them anymore. you're the last outlaw. And Jeff, outlaws never die. We're the very last of our kind. I want to say something. Has Jeff Jarrett ever considered not being the last outlaw and instead being an outlaw who realizes that he maybe wants other younger outlaws to keep riding the range after he's gone, and maybe he wants to invest in the next generation of outlaws, and he thinks the banks will still need to be robbed and stagecoaches will still need to be held up even once he's retired?
It's a better story. Pass on the outlaw like tactics and, you know, the lore. Pass on all that on. You don't want it to die with you.
I wrote it down. I was looking at it, and then I thought, the Mask of Zorro. Just do the Mask of Zorro, Jeff Jarrett. Just be like, I'm worried no one is going to be doing the outlaw work that has to be done when I'm gone. I must find a little man to train to wear a mask and do great sword work.
Who, didn't we just see somebody who had... Oh, did he get hurt again? Who? Bandito? Did Bandito get...
Oh, no.
He got hurt again, didn't he?
I don't know.
No,
I was just going to say, didn't we just watch a lot of... vignettes about somebody in an old Western.
Oh, we did, and
I
was yeah. Like, Bandito,
it's Bandito,
yeah.
But I think he got hurt again, so.
You know how Zorro would do his little, like, Z swipe, and that was a special move that Antonio Banderas had to learn how to do? Wouldn't it be so fun if some little guy had to learn how to do Jeff Jarrett's special guitar smash?
It is special little, like, dance
always goes
move.
Over me. I don't really
if he was training a little Jeff Jarrett clone, that would honestly be really funny. That could get me, yeah.
That would get me way more than whatever this is.
Yeah.
I think
it would get you more than the call girl stuff would. That's so weird.
I know it's out of character that I don't like it.
I think it's like it's interesting for Dustin Rhodes to say, like, Jeff, outlaws never die. We're the very last of our kind. I know he wasn't probably thinking about it that deeply, but I'm kind of like, okay, but... The moral of the story ultimately should be that, like, but someone else can take up the mantle. Like, it's important for someone else to take up the mantle, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, to just be like, wow, I'm just one in an endless cycle of outlaws. And it's like, this is the circle game, you know? Like, the circle of life. Like, don't you think some of that playing in that space a little? Do you see what I mean?
The circle game. The circle of life.
Well, it was both. I meant both.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. You can't, like, you don't get to, like, close the door and shut off the light when you leave. Like,
yeah.
Come on. Like, this
you
is
need
the whole
to
thing.
Inspire someone else so that, like, when they go to fight, like, they see your face in the clouds, you know? And it's like, wow, he's still with it. That last outlaw never dies because he lives in my heart, you know?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
Also, like... he's not really that unique a wrestler. It's a little bit like, get over yourself, The Last Outlaw.
I don't really understand The Last Outlaw thing at all, no.
Well, let's do the second half of the Old Man Tango. Somehow relatedly, and I'm not 100% sure on this, but we'll hash it out together. Hangman and Christopher Daniels had a Texas death match on Collision last week, and Hangman full-on murdered Christopher Daniels. He said, you came here to die, and I came here to kill you, so we're a perfect match, 100%. Let's do it. And they did. And then he did Christopher Daniels' own finisher on him and left. And Nigel on commentary said Adam Page is the angel of death, which is a point for Nigel in my book. I do think that's quite fun to say. Mm-hmm. And so then on this week's Dynamite, we had an overlapping storylines thing where MJF came out to cut a response promo to Jeff Jarrett and got cut off by Hangman's music, and Hangman stomped down to the ring and went like nose to nose with MJF. And to me, it was unclear if I had missed something specific or if like Hangman was like mad at MJF or if it was like he was just generally fairly had a bit of an ill temper.
I had to go back. I had to go back and read what had happened because I think MJF was talking and I was mad because he was talking and then I like tuned out and then all of a sudden Hangman was there, so I did have to go back. And I guess commentary was selling that Hangman was supposed to come out and instead MJF came out, so it's like MJF crashed Hangman's time, like, and so Hangman just got mad and like came out after all. I think
sounds like a production issue.
The jobber was out in the ring already, yeah, and then MJF came out, but it wasn't his match, it was like Hangman's match. So,
okay,
yeah, but I don't think they'd had anything prior to that. So I was quite surprised.
Interesting. And Christopher Daniels was just like, well, what am I going to, I'm not going to do anything about that. Yes, it's my job, but I'm not going to do anything about that. He killed me last week. So maybe that adds up. Okay, so he's mad and he's like, get out of here. And then he squashed the jobber and he used Christopher Daniels' finisher again, I think. And afterwards, mm-hmm. Christopher Daniels came out and said, Hangman, I know you. This is not your heart. I know your heart. This isn't you.
This isn't your heart. I know it. Not to make light of domestic violence.
Or cold. Oh, no. This is a real banner app for us.
Did Christopher Daniels not grab the mic and say, I'm so sorry that I made you want to hit me? I was like, what is this promo?
I don't think you're making light of it. I think that you said, what is the message here? At the time, as we watched, you said, what message should we take away from this? That the man who is baited apologizes and said, I deserved it. I don't know that he said, I deserved it. He said, I didn't want to fight you. I just wanted to be your friend. And you didn't like that. You got really, really mad. And I'm really sorry about that. And you did murder me. I'm really sorry, but you did murder me. And you win. You've won the last match that I'll ever wrestle. So this is goodbye. I'm sorry. And I hope you can be happy now. And Hangman, and this is why, fuck you, he's the best in the biz. Mm-hmm. The face journey this man went on every mm-hmm. time. No one does it as well as him. He's so good at being like, I'm so fucked up in my brain. And you can just see him coming back to himself a little bit and being like, what am I fucking doing? Like, mm-hmm. I'm a monster. And then the moment where he's like, yeah, I'm a monster and I'm being a fucking monster. So shut up, Adam. I'm being a monster.
Mm-hmm. Which is such good continuity from like when he was initially heel mm-hmm. turning too, when he had those moments of like going back to the ring and people screaming and then kind of that I'm a monster realization then too. Incredible.
He's really fucking good at what he does. So okay, do you want to talk about Hangman retiring Christopher Daniels versus whatever's going on with Jeff Jarrett?
I'd say, congratulations to Christopher Daniels for doing it real normal and so good nice. And not really taking nice. Up
it's stupid some real, time. Some real goofus and gallant shit, right? Where you're just like, and I really enjoyed all of our friends podcasting this week and trying to thread this needle where they're like, old men are retiring is awful unless you do it the way CD did it, which was good.
Yeah.
Although everyone was pre-mad about this match before it happened, and then they were like, oh, it was good in the end, which I think should be a lesson to everyone in the IWC to, like, wait and see how it goes first. But
so true.
But yeah, it's a huge goof as a gallon energy because it's just like, oh, this like really helped further Hangman's storyline and characterization. It was like pretty dramatic, like a nice way to go out for CD. And we got to see a man go out on his back, which I love.
Yeah. And they're friends, and you know that, and they have a long history, and you bought it, and it didn't take up too much time. And I, you know what? I'm going to be the only person who says it because I was never mad at you. Christopher Daniels, it wasn't your fault what happened with the EVP storyline. It was nobody's fault but probably Tony Khan's. And you did nothing wrong. And I will always love and respect you, Vice Principal. Christopher Daniels, you did what you were told to do. And it wasn't evil, okay? It wasn't like not in a really bad evil way. Like just like your boss tells you to do something and you're like, well, I might not do it that way, but you're the boss. And he's a billionaire, so you did what you had to do, and I respect you.
And like we've said about a billion other things, Christopher Daniels was never on our screens that much. It's like he wasn't doing MJF like 13 minute long promos.
No,
you're just a poor man. It was fun
that he was an ineffectual vice principal. I had a great time watching it. He for that so 1 minute a week,
so tired and stressed out. And he said, "If I have to give out one more demerit about skirt length, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. I don't have time for this. People are fighting in stairwell A. Can I get somebody over to stairwell A now?
I can't quit now. I've already got all this time invested into my pension. I just have to see it through.
I don't get paid enough to lose that pension now. I have no retirement savings.
Vice Principal Christopher Daniels, they could never make me hate you. None of this was your fault. You are my king. I'm standing on my desk for you. Oh, Captain, my Captain. the retirements of old men, you know, it's really a rough situation. I do want to say here at the end, on the note of not being ageist, you know, I don't exactly keep going back and forth because I'm like pretty firmly on the side of like, God, they can't make me keep watching all these old men go to die programs. But I do understand that the wrestling industry is like pretty fucked up and like and WWE has dominated it for a long time. And it does seem like probably pretty fucked up that like you have all these guys who are like really respected and did really like, you know, cool stuff, or, you know, it's like they had careers that perhaps deserve to be celebrated or perhaps not. Who am I to say? And they want to celebrate them. And some people want to see them celebrated. And they're all want to retire now. Like, they're just like, they saw that you could retire good. And we're just like, God, I'd love to stop. And I want it to be good when I stop. So let's get it done. And they all want to get it done now. And I just want to say, like, it's not that I'm unsympathetic to you as human beings. It isn't. Yeah. I want to be clear about that. I think it's okay for, like, wrestlers to take pride in their own work and to care about their own legacies and to, like, you know, it's like they're human beings and they're artists, some good at it and some not. But, like, sometimes I do, in these conversations, I do start to feel like, well, they're not, like, I don't know. It's hard to be a completely selfless person. It's good that some people are capable of it, but like, it is hard. It's okay for people to care about their legacies.
I just felt that way when people were mad at Shelton Benjamin, where it's like, well, of course he wants to like go somewhere else that he thinks might appreciate him more and to do his art there. Like, that seems very innocuous to me. It's like, of course, like, it's the job of the promotion to slot him in well where he is, but it's, like, the individual person wanting, like, to have creative, you know.
Right. Like, the real art, like, a lot of the time probably is in being, like, okay, you want to be respected and as a performer and feel like you are, you know, being appreciated, and also I want to, like, make new stars and build up a strong program, and we have to figure out a way to do both of those things. And a lot of times it does feel like they didn't figure out a way to do both of those things. And so just one of the things, the not as good for me thing is happening.
Yeah. So I think the other thing too is that a lot of times with the egos and stuff, like they think they will be sort of more celebrated and have a better legacy if they take up a lot of time and get a lot of focus. Yeah. But it's like, no, if you do well with 2 minutes, people will appreciate that way better. And I thought even with MJF, I was like, oh, for the like brief moment, like a couple of weeks ago where he was doing like much shorter promos and his match was less featured, I immediately warmed up to him. And it's like, oh, you could get me back on board if you just started taking a reasonable amount of time and also maybe not saying horrific things about women would help too. But
yeah, that'd be huge.
You know, but I think like that is really the lesson people, the old men should be taking from the retirement journeys is like Christopher Daniels didn't take up a lot of my time. Sting, frankly, didn't take up a lot of my time. And they did great. Both their retirements, I celebrate and I feel celebrate. Very fondly towards both of them.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And I also just think it's like hard. I'm sure it's very hard to be getting towards the end of your career and to be like, I just only have so much time and I want to know that this went well. And it's like, well, you can't really know in the moment. I mean, I guess Sting kind of knew it went like really well, but like for most people, it's like, you're not really going to know. You're going to like hope it was good enough. And you're going to look back and be like, well, it either was or wasn't the career that I wanted. And again, the really bad thing is just that it's happening with everybody all at the same time. And it's taking up so much time and it's maybe not really good stories. And
Right. And if they were all being done well, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. And there's also, I think, in some ways a thing because it's like WWE for years and years seemed to throw old men out with the trash. Like you weren't ever allowed to retire with any sort of grace. So now all of the old men have heard that there's an old friend's sanctuary and are running for it all at one time. And it's like,
you fed one squirrel and now your whole yard is
all the squirrels. And I'm like, some of you could go retire at TNA or like I don't know. Can New Japan kill a few of these dogs? Like,
shelter is full, please. We only have so many hours in a day.
It's also like your whole career still exists. Like you don't have to have a retirement party to have retired and have the legacy that you have.
But I think it's a little, now what I'm going to say is I'm crazy, but it's like, as a woman, it's like the moment where you're like, am I going to have a baby or what? And it's like, there's just a small window to like either have the baby or not have the baby. And then it's like, after that, you can't really have the baby. And it's like, no one's, I'm assuming they all don't want to become Ric Flair. You know what I mean? It's like, you want to have like, they're trying to figure out like, have I done enough? Or like, if I do just one big final push, will everybody like remember that really well? And it's like, well, you know. I don't know. I guess I would like watch week to week and be like, it's not going that good. They're not loving it. This shouldn't be my legacy.
Back it up. Tell the dirt sheets it wasn't my idea.
Sometimes like, you're out there trying to get pregnant and suddenly it's like, wait a second. I am not sure I should be trying to get pregnant right now. Do you think that was a good way of addressing that topic?
Yeah. I think it's definitely an us way. Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, I guess, you know, Tony, I said in the schedule, I said, I wonder if Tony Khan feels like an exhausted executioner at this point. Like, it's like the squirrels are thronging in, being like, kill me, kill me, kill me, kill me. And Tony is just like, I only have two hands.
One hand collision, one hand dynamite. That's all there is.
I'm squeezing as hard as I can. You die when you die. But Leah said she thinks he might be celebrating it. She might be having a pretty good time, actually.
I'm just afraid that he's so horny about it. And he's like, I'm a safe place for old men.
Old men love to come be killed at my sake and my kill shelter. Wow, guys. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about that we did not talk about?
Awesome. I don't think so.
Perfect, because I don't think we can top what we've just done. On that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Ann.
I've been Leah.
This is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Twitch at Tunnel Talk Pod via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. We have merch now. You can find it at chop-tees.com. You can also find us on the Social Suplex Network feed. you can find us on our feed and the Social Suplex Network feed. You can also find us on the Social Suplex Network Discord. Please, guys, why did I do such a bad job at this today, do you think? Why did I do it so bad?
Hey, it's her birthday. Listeners, it's her birthday. You have to forgive her.
I just a little birthday girl. Anything. Hey, guys, you can find us on our feed or the Social Suplex Network feed, where you can check out some of the other amazing podcasts on the network. You can also find us on the Social Suplex Network Discord, and you can read what we and our listeners had to say about Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley being funny tailors. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. And as stay frosty, my God. And as always, please come back next week.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.